Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome again to the latest edition of the Rise Up, See Red podcast, episode 192, our draft review show for the Arizona Cardinals. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site for SB Nation. Seth, the draft is done. Mock drafts are over, thank goodness, because the mock draft that we did last week, not only did I not get the Cardinals pick right, I only got one pick right for my entire round. So the streak is over, and I'm apparently an embarrassment to everything related to the draft, or just part of the norm, according to Mark Dalton, who said that the average for a 40 notable mock drafts, and our mock draft probably didn't make that notable list, was the average correct were three, with Daniel Jeremiah coming out on top again, second year in a row, doing 8 correct out of 32 picks.
So and it was a first round where we knew there wasn't going to be many correct things because we knew trades were going to influence the draft. Obviously, it started with Baker Mayfield going first overall, which came out Wednesday and was confirmed after 10 minutes on the clock on Thursday, because apparently having 6 months to make your pick was too much time for the Cleveland Browns. And then the Browns threw everybody for a loop at 4, and it really just changed the whole complexion of the draft moving forward.
And so we have ultimately that the Browns threw the whole first round for a loop, but that became very fortunate for the Cardinals, especially for those fans who have been waiting and waiting and waiting for the Cardinals to make a big move at quarterback. They have done that. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about the picks. We're going to talk about what we think of them. We're going to talk about the deals that they made and what they mean moving forward. So we'll start with what happened actually with the draft. So in round one, the Cardinals make the move after Josh Rosen slides all the way to number 10 in the draft. The Cardinals make the move to trade up, trading places with the Oakland Raiders. The Oakland Raiders are our favorite team to trade with because when we trade with the Raiders, it means we get a quarterback of the future or something of the like. Carson Palmer came from the Raiders. Josh Rosen came from the Raiders pick. Jared Verdier came from the Raiders too, which was a pretty good move for a little while. So we like deals with the Raiders. So Cardinals give up. They swap picks. So they give up number 15. They get their third round pick, number 79, and they give up their fifth round pick. And they move up 5 spots. They get the 10th pick, with which they select quarterback Josh Rosen out of UCLA, quarterback of the future, and they don't have to give. So they still have their second round pick. They don't give up any picks for next year. It's viewed as pretty dang good. That wrapped up round one. There was lots of talk. It was exciting. Josh Rosen, quarterback of the future, and if you want to jump on the bandwagon, maybe he's the quarterback of the now. Second round on Friday with day 2 of the draft, the Arizona kid Christian Kirk out of Saguaro High School in Scottsdale, the kid who spurned Arizona State to go to Texas A&M, was a standout there. Didn't quite take the next step to like superstar like people thought he would after his freshman year. Nonetheless, he is the second round pick for the Cardinals, which was not a very big secret considering he was, you know, he's been friends with Larry Fitzgerald for a while. He was at Larry Fitzgerald's. He participated in Larry Fitzgerald's celebrity softball game. So they pick up a receiver. And so in picks 1 and 2, they do 2 of their biggest needs, their quarterback of the future. Big time receiver in round 2. Round 3, they did not have the regular number 15 pick in the round, so that gave up to the Raiders. Cardinals get their compensatory pick number 33 in the round, with which they use Michigan offensive lineman Mason Cole, a guy that Seth talked about in our offensive preview, played mostly tackle in college, is a better interior player, played tackle because his team needed it, and he looks like he will be an interior player for the future, potentially maybe the now as well. Round 4, 5, 6, and 7, the Cardinals had 3 selections on day 3, the first of which they used at the end of the 4th round, their compensatory pick. They took Chase Edmonds out of Fordham. Not even the first Fordham player the Cardinals have selected. He's only the second player from Fordham selected in the last 50 years. Cardinals have both of them. 2010, they took John Skelton in the 5th round. We remember him. And in the 4th round, they took Chase Edmonds, an incredibly productive running back that Seth and I knew that the Cardinals really liked. Some people are kind of surprised at the pick. Probably shouldn't have been surprised at the pick. Over 5,800 yards in college. And in fact, he would have set all sorts of records had he not gotten hurt his senior year, when he only rushed for 767 yards after rushing for no less than 1,300 in any other season. He was on pace to bust all sorts of records. That was their 4th round pick. 5th round, they had nobody. In the 6th round, they use the Jared Valdir pick, the pick that they picked up from the Denver Broncos, the 8th pick of the round, to take Chris Campbell, cornerback out of Penn State. Finally, they addressed the cornerback position, a guy that started one season long, got some decent speed, very athletic, has great short area movements, quickness, and a very high vertical leap. Doesn't have elite speed, or at least didn't test that way. And then to wrap up their draft with the 3rd to the last pick of the draft, number 254 overall, they took Cincinnati tackle Corey Cunningham. Big guy, 6'6", 6'5", 310 pounds, 311, 306, whatever they have him listed at. Very athletic. Played last 2 seasons at – he entered college as a tight end, at former basketball player, 220 pounds. He grew into that tackle role. His final season, did not give up a sack. 4.9 second 40, 36-inch vertical leap, all at over 300 pounds. The guy is an athletic freak, and apparently Ray Brown loved him. Those are the picks. We'll go pick by pick, but overall, what were your initial reactions to the pick? We don't want to do grades yet. We're going to do that at the end, but what were your initial reactions, feelings about what was addressed and how they addressed them?
Well, obviously, the biggest one is Josh Rosen, and that's no matter what happens, unless Christian Kirk, Mason Cole, and, you know, Christian Campbell become all pros. This draft class, unfortunately, lives and dies with Josh Rosen, because that's how the NFL works. It's a quarterback-driven league. So I thought the move itself was brilliant. When you look at it on any of the trade value charts, you know, the Cardinals, obviously, you always give up more than you get back in terms of value. But when you look at it from, like, the Cardinals' perspective, they gave up an equivalent of about pick number 140 too much. So a 5th-round pick. You know, I'm going through what the Jets gave up right now. And just in terms of overpayment, the Jets gave up the equivalent of basically a late first, and we don't even have the completion of that trade yet. Yeah, the Jets gave up the equivalent of about the 27th pick in the draft, and we don't even have a completion of that, because the Jets have to give the Colts next year's number 2 pick as well. So when you look at it just from a straight value perspective, the Cardinals got away with a great deal. We've talked about on this show, I've talked about on my draft podcast, the quarterback tax. You have to pay the quarterback tax. It always rears its head if you have a franchise quarterback, or to go if you're trying to go get one. Well, the Cardinals went and got one. Yeah, they overpaid, but when you look at it in the hindsight, or in the realization that you're always going to overpay for a quarterback, they overpaid by about a 5th-round pick. That's it. And so I know for you and I, it's like, pay that every day of the week, right? Like, yes. Go ahead, give up. You know what? We would have been okay from a news writing standpoint, 6th and 7th, you could have drafted after the men's and been done. So,
yes,
you know, from that perspective, it's great value. Now, when you look at the player itself, you and I talked about this last week, Rosen would have probably been my number two quarterback. I think the biggest concern for Rosen is can he stay healthy? Can the shoulder hold up that he's had surgery on? And, you know, how concerned are you with concussions? We've talked about the reason why he has both those issues. He's a player that plays similar to Carson Palmer, and that they think that they can make plays and that they know where the play is supposed to go. They're very intellectual and intelligent quarterbacks. And so they say, idiot route that's not to show open in another half second, I'm going to hold on to the ball that much longer instead of getting 6 or 7 yards. Anti-Sam Bradford or anti-Blaine Gabbert ideal, in that instead of getting rid of the ball and not taking a hit, I'm going to hold on to the ball as long as I can because my guy's about to break open. Now, if you want to call that a negative, obviously the concern or negative is can your body hold up? But from that perspective, it's not a bad thing. Obviously, the off-the-field stuff, and it's not even off the field stuff in terms of breaking the law or being, you know, a degenerate in any type of way. It's apparently he's kind of a jerk to some people. And the big thing today that we're recording on a Tuesday night, the big thing today was, you know, that it came out that he rubbed some people in the Browns organization the wrong way. Okay. Well, that doesn't even mean anything. Like, honestly, to me, that's such a non-starter. You know, like, go to his teammates. Do his teammates vouch for him? That's literally all that matters. You know, personally, I think it's going to be quite fun that the Cardinals are going to have the bad guy for once, right? Like, they're going to have the villain in the story. They're going to have the guy that rubs people the wrong way, that draws the ire of the fan base. Because, one, you know, the Cardinals haven't really been good enough to be the bad guy. But two, when they are pretty good, I mean, can you really hate Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson? Like, I guess their biggest villain in their Super Bowl run was probably Darnell Dockett, right? Like, you're not going to hate Kurt Warner or Larry Fitzgerald or Anquan Boldin. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's kind of silly, but it's kind of, you know, it's fun. Like, you got a guy that riles people up and ruffles feathers. And from a talent standpoint, I mean, the lowest floor in the class, I would say, bar none. I mean, this guy is the starting NFL quarterback. I mean, he is a Trent Green type quarterback at worst, where he's a guy that can go out there and win games, keep your offense on time, move the ball. He makes a Pro Bowl or two and, you know, puts up a 4,000 yard season, but he may not be a guy that propels you, but he's a guy that's going to start in the NFL for a long time. And I would say that is, outside of injury, his kind of worst case scenario. And for me, that's a win. You know, it may not be the quarterback we're all hoping he is or expecting him to become, but that's still, you know, if you're talking, you can have 8 to 10 years of, you know, 9 to 11 win seasons with Josh Rosen at the helm, I think everybody's going to say, sign me up. So when you look at it from that perspective, obviously Rosen was a home run. Christian Kirk, this is going to be the pick that kind of – it's going to be the one that everybody laments. Obviously, again, Rosen's going to be the guy that kind of sells whatever happens in this class. But if Kirk comes out and plays well, nobody's going to remember passing on an Isaiah Oliver who went to the Falcons a little bit later. But – If Isaiah Oliver turns into a really good cornerback and Christian Kirk's kind of a middling receiver, then you're going to start to, oh, why didn't we do this or that or the other thing? I like the pick of Kirk. He wasn't my number one, but if you go to my ranking, he was in the same tier as DJ Moore, who allegedly the Cardinals had a receiver. Cortland Sutton, I thought, was the best receiver in the class just because of his size and athleticism profile. Now, Kirk and Moore are the same type of player to me, and they're the same type of athlete, and they're guys that win. And so you look at the cost of that, the Carolina Panthers, now they were able to trade back and get an extra pick, but the Carolina Panthers took him at 24. The Cardinals got Christian Kirk, you know, 47. That's huge value. That's a huge win for the Cardinals that allows them to address their wide receiver position. I don't know, and quite honestly, I don't think that Christian Kirk's ever going to be a kind of a consensus number one type of guy. But you and I have talked about this before. I see Kirk in the Golden Tate mode. A guy that is a really high-end number two, a low-end, you know, kind of one guy, a guy that is a consistent 900 to 1,100-yard guy, a guy that can win from different positions, mostly, you know, is best utilized in the slot, but he can return punts, he can return kicks, he can do some different things, and he is a kind of an extension of the running game, which honestly, with even the pick of Chase Edmonds, the Cardinals don't really need that, you know, but it's still a weapon to have. And so when you look at it in that perspective, I think they got a great first two rounds. They addressed probably two of their three biggest needs, immediate needs. And I know Sam Bradford's the starter, but you and I talked about this. They had to come out of this draft with a quarterback. They succeeded in that and got what I would say is one of the top two, and then they ended up with one of the top three, again, on my board, wide receivers in the class. And all it cost them was a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick. Like, that's knocking out the first two rounds.
All right, so let's take a brief break and come back and talk individual picks. We'll start with Josh Rose, and we'll talk about the trades. That's already hit on some of the points. We'll do that coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to let you guys know of a service that is now a partner of the show. And for those of you, I don't wear glasses, I don't wear contacts, but my kids do. I have two kids that both use contacts. And you might be thinking, isn't buying contacts simple? It's actually not, because it's required that you have a new prescription every year to buy lenses, even if your vision hasn't changed. And so if you have contacts, and sometimes I've done this with my kids, is that sometimes put it off. It's a bad habit because, you know, they can't get to the doctor as much. And so Simple Contacts is instead of an annual appointment that costs you up to $250 and many hours, you can take a 5-minute vision test online. And as long as the eyes look healthy, one of their licensed ophthalmologists will extend the prescription to your hand. So you already have to have a prescription. So if you have a current prescription, it hasn't expired yet, you can get that extended. And it's really very simple. There's a vision test online. It's only $20. Now, my kids, because they're not 18, were not able to do this. But it's super easy. It's super easy. It takes just a few minutes. You do it online. They just check for your eye health. They examine that, and then you can make your contacts order. Ordering contacts is super easy. If you know what your prescription is, and I looked at my kids' prescription, I saw what their lenses were, saw what their prescription was, everything that goes involved with that. You just plug it in. You put it in. If their prescription was still valid and live, They made a phone call, they made an email and a text to me to make sure who I was, that I was actually their father. But it was super simple, and it was cheaper. It was cheaper. So getting the contacts online through Simple Contacts was simple. It was painless. I didn't have to take them down for an eye appointment. And I was able to order those contacts for cheaper than I normally would have gotten them. It saved me quite a bit of money in that. And so what Simple Contacts is offering is you get $30 off. You get a $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/CRED or enter the code CRED at checkout. This isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye exam. We just test it at your current prescription, still helps you see 20/20 and renew that prescription. But it's that simple. It really is that simple. You go to simplecontacts.com/CRED and use the promo code when you check out, CRED, and you get $30 off your order. And do that. So go to simplecontacts.com/CRED to get your new set of contacts at a great price and $30 off. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and we're going to talk about Josh Rosen. Seth, you've already talked about some of that for us. For me, the idea of Josh Rosen, I'll say it right now, Josh Rosen was not my favorite quarterback in the class. I was super intrigued with Baker Mayfield. He was my favorite in the draft. As a fan, I thought that he had all the leadership. I thought he had the playmaking skills, the ability to elevate that team. What the Cardinals did get in Josh Rosen is the one that has, of those three quarterbacks, who has what would appear to be the lowest bust factor. He knows how to make NFL reads. He knows how to make pre-snap reads. He's mechanically sound. There's no issues of accuracy. There are no issues of arm strength. There's an injury history. It feels to me, Josh Rosen, the only reason he fails in the NFL is injuries. He's smart. He's very smart. I don't think he's going to be an issue in the locker room. Everything that he said thus far has been, with the exception of the 9 mistakes, which on revengeofthebirds.com, you can find a link to get yourself a fantastic shirt, a 9 mistakes t-shirt. To remember the NFL draft, where 9 teams took mistakes, and then he revised that to say it was only just the 3 other quarterbacks. He thinks he's the best quarterback in the class. He's got the lowest bust factor. I think at a low end, what you can get out of Rosen is a Sam Bradford type career. If the same durability issues, I think you can see something like a Joe Flacco, who, you know, is elite, of course. No, he's.
But I was going to say elite.
But I mean, and on a high end, you can get Aaron Rodgers or even Kurt Warner. That type of production, he has that ability. And the fact that they were able to get them at number 10 because he's got some questionable demeanors, and the fact that this thing that came out with about Alonzo Highsmith and the Browns, it's the weirdest thing in the world. Put this out on record. He said, you know, it's one thing to say we loved Baker Mayfield. We had Darnold at number one. And he said it. We had Darnold number one until we interacted with Baker and we saw the type of effect that he has on people, that he can elevate people. He can change and motivate people. And then you looked on the fact that Baker Mayfield on the field, his production stayed the same or even improved when he lost talent. Josh Allen, there's always the question of the accuracy and the talent around him. Josh Rosen, you have the injuries. And then the interesting thing they talk about is the fact that, you know, he was at an airport and he saw the UCLA volleyball team. He talked to the coach. So, you know, about this, you know, this Josh Rosen kid. And the coach tells him to talk to his girlfriend. He's over there because apparently his girlfriend was on the volleyball team. And he used that example to illustrate there was just something off, something that rubbed him wrong about the personality of Rosen. Maybe it's the fact that for Cleveland, that sort of air of confidence wouldn't necessarily fly. But you get they took a guy that was basically the same thing in Baker Mayfield in terms of personality. I love the pick. I didn't think Rosen was going to be available. But I have no problem with the pick because, again, you look at what he did in college, you don't think you're going to have issues with adjusting where he doesn't know how to play football. Like Blaine Gabbert in college and then Blaine Gabbert on the field, you wondered whether he knew how to play football with some decisions that he made. Rosen's going to be able to make pre-snap reads. If he stays healthy, he's going to make plays down the field. He's going to be able to pick teams apart. He doesn't have a really erratic arm. It's not like Jay Cutler with his – he might be Jay Cutler in demeanor in terms of how he makes people feel about him. But he's not Jay Cutler on the field, who is a reckless thrower of the football. Rosen will make risky throws, but he doesn't have the same – turnover propensity that Cutler or even a Sam Darnold did. He protects the football. He holds the ball sometimes too long. So I get the impression the only thing that holds him back in his career is injuries. As to the situation he lands in, I think it's going to be good for him because he's probably going to have to sit. And so he's chosen Rosen. He was the number one recruit coming out of high school, heading to UCLA, started as a freshman after Brett Hundley left. He was highly successful. And so there is an air of I don't know if it's entitlement, but there's an expectation of greatness he carries around. He knows he's good and he expects to play, but the comments that he said as well, he's going to be the best darn water boy that he has to be. And I think that'll be wonderful for him. And just the fact that Sam Bradford is as gracious a teammate as he is willing to help him. So I don't think there's going to be any animosity there. They're going to compete their butts off. And I think ultimately Josh Rosen is going to sit probably most of his first year, if not the entire year. I think the only reason thing he actually plays is I still think Mike Glennon will be the second option to start unless things go sideways this year. I love the pick. I love the fact that they gave up a third and a fifth. And while you say that it was based on the trade charts, the value chart, they overpaid. No way did they overpay, because they didn't have to give up their second rounder and they didn't have to give up anything for next year, which means it's a total win. A fifth round pick is a throw-in pick, is my opinion, because it's a day three pick. And day three picks, even though, you know, if you develop through day three picks and they turn into something, then you're doing damn well as a football team. But you've seen the stats. You know, as I went back through the picks, day three picks hardly ever turn out to. They stick around for a year or two on rosters typically, and that's about it. I loved the Josh Rosen pick, and I'm super excited to see what he can do in 2019. Let's be honest. I'm looking for 2019 because I hope Sam Bradford kills it this year. The preseason will be fun. That's one thing. The preseason will be fun.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you look at the overall – kind of grades the Cardinals get, and you know, draft grades are silly, and you and I have talked about this before, but it's odd to see the Cardinals get praised for something like the Josh Rosen pick, when it just seems so kind of like a slam dunk, right? Like,
right. They made the move.
They did.
When they've stood pat before and get leapfrogged year after year. And, I mean, let's be honest, they were lucky. The Browns made this draft for the Cardinals. They made the first round for the Cardinals because everyone thought Darnold was going number one, and then everyone thought Chubb was going number four. Their decision to go Baker and Denzel Ward, it changed the entire first round, which made it possible. The Cardinals, otherwise, they weren't going to be able to trade up.
No, and that's the thing is, and that's, I think that's what's so weird about this is that it was kind of a no-brainer, something we've talked about. Like, this had to happen. I mean, unless they were going to be the Ravens and make that move back into round one to grab Lamar Jackson at 32, there was no other avenue for them to explore to get a quarterback, right? So they had to make the move, but they gave up so little. And they, I mean, because that third round pick was basically a throw in when you think about it as well, because they had another third round pick. So it wasn't like they were sacrificing their only third round pick. You know, so in the end, it cost them a fifth round pick in the scheme of things. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it was such a slam dunk no brainer. And then you get the guy with, you know, the lowest ceiling, you get it, the guy that has the you know, what looks to be the easiest transition in the NFL. So all of that, it just seemed to align for the Cardinals. Now, you know, as Cardinals fans, you and I, maybe this should worry us, right? It never is this easy for the Cardinals, right? It never falls in their lap like this. But just
it did with Matt Leinart, and it looked promising, and then he kept getting hurt. So I'm, yeah, like I said, the only way that Rosen fails, I think, because I don't think the work ethic is there. There's no issue with work ethic. There's no issue with football skills. There's no issue. I mean, despite what they said, there's no issue with him not loving football more than like loving fame and loving fun. It's just, if he stays healthy, Matt Leinart's career was ultimately derailed by injuries and then Ken Whisenhunt not liking him. But he didn't do anything after that. So it's not like it was the great what if, but you can't really blame any. You can't blame Wisden for what happened because he did absolutely zero the rest of his career except for getting hurt when he had another start in Houston.
Right, and so that's the thing is you look at it, it just, you know, it seemed like a no-brainer. It seemed like the right thing to do, and they made the move, and it not only worked. I mean, it's obviously it obviously worked out to the point where it was kind of improbable because of the low cost that they had to pay for it. Now, obviously, if it works out in the end, that's another story we have. You know, even if he does start this year, that's a story we're not going to be able to tell at least until 2020 when we're like, okay, this was a bust, or okay, like this guy's the real deal. I mean, you look at the thoughts on Carson Wentz and Jared Goff after their first year of playing, and you know, depending on where you read, Goff was a complete bust and Wentz was a potential bust. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you have to be excited about the fact that the Cardinals not only got a potential, you know, quarterback of the future, but they got him at a great cost, at a low cost, and were able to kind of reshape their offensive structure in one draft without having to sell the farm.
Now the question is, now as that's been thrown out there, should the Cardinals start Sam? I mean, should they trade Sam Bradford? Let's say that Rosen picks things up really quickly in OTAs and minicamp. Do you then trade Sam Bradford so that you can start Rosen right away? My thoughts, I mean, that's out there. Rosen doesn't want to sit. He's willing to sit. And history says he's going to be the starter this year. That's what history says. I think it was Albert Breer, or maybe it was Adam Schefter. I can't remember the tweet I saw it, but shared a chart of all the quarterbacks that were drafted in the top 10 over the last 10 years. And almost every single one of them by midseason was in the starting lineup. And this is the one case where I'm thinking, with the exception of Patrick Mahomes last year, I think we have a Patrick Mahomes situation here, and which is a perfect scenario. I don't want them to trade Sam Bradford because in this transition year, Sam Bradford's safe. As long as he's healthy, he's safe. And, I mean, Steve Keim really believes in Sam Bradford. And it seems everyone in the locker room really believes in Sam Bradford. So why would you trade that away? I think it would be a silly move, especially let him be that John Kitna for Josh Rosen, like John Kitna was for Carson Palmer, which would be, I think it's exactly what this young kid needs. Just, he doesn't need humble pie, but I think just a tad bit of adversity I'm making him work for will make him that much better.
Yeah. And I'm of the opinion that if from a mental perspective, Rosen can handle it, I'm not worried about the physical aspects of it. You know, I see a lot of people, he's coming off concussions, so you don't want him to get hurt, and the Cardinals offensive line is still suspect. It's like, well, if that's a problem, then they probably shouldn't have drafted him in the first round. Like, if you're concerned about injury, I mean, yeah, we're hopeful that the Cardinals offensive line can improve under Ray Brown over the next 2 years, but I mean, next year, are they going to draft an offensive lineman number one and then sign, you know, another big free agent and hope that turns the offensive line around? Like, at some point these guys got to play. Now, as far as Bradford goes, you do feel bad for the guy because obviously his lot in life is to be the quarterback that you have before you draft the one you love. And so, you know, that's a tough road to hoe, but he's been doing it for a long time now. I just think for me, I struggle with the idea of Bradford being the guy because I don't see an avenue at which he's healthy for 16 games. I just don't. Like, and it has nothing to do with the offensive line. It has nothing to do with the, you know, the skill players the Cardinals possess. I just don't see a guy that has been healthy the last couple of years. And so why should we expect it now as opposed to the opposite? So, you know, obviously you don't wish ill on anybody. I hope Bradford is healthy and successful this whole year, and that he's able to play, because I don't think he's doing it for money at this point, because he's made a ton of money, but you know, obviously he still has some a passion and love for the game, and he thinks he's got something to offer a team, and so that's why he's willing to take, you know, a contract like the Cardinals offered him and bet on himself. So, you know, we'll see if that works out, but if I had my druthers, I'd just roll with Rosen this year and kind of move forward getting him some work so he's ready to go as they're moving through this kind of transition period.
What do you think the Cardinals could get for Bradford at this point? Could they, what would be his value?
Well, I think the hardest thing is obviously he has a no trade clause in his contract. So that's the first thing, but
right.
I think if Rosen's named the starter anytime in training camp, it opens up the avenue to trade him, because he's not going to want to sit, right? Like he got $10 million, I know, but another $5 million or whatever is tied to him actually playing. And I know it's not all about money with him. Obviously, like I said, he's got plenty, but he wants to play too. Like, he doesn't want to just sit there and be told that, you know, oh, this rookie's better than you, you're done type thing. And so when it comes to that, I think you could probably get a day three pick for him, unless there's a serious injury to maybe, God, I don't even want to talk about it, because it's just like bad karma.
If you're the Eagles, for some reason, they always are able to trade from a position of power. Always.
Right. But if you have a similar situation to what happened in Minnesota with Teddy Bridgewater, again, I don't want to jinx any young quarterbacks, but you know, if were to happen, I think you could possibly get like a fourth rounder that converts to a third or even a second, depending on playing time, you know, and statistics and things like that. So, you know, I think you could do something like that. But you're not going to get a first. I know the Eagles got a first for him a couple of years ago. It ain't happening. Like, get it out of your head right now. No way. I legitimately don't think you could get a day two pick without it being, you know, one of those. I can't remember what the term is right now off the top
conditional.
Of my head.
It'd have to be a conditional. Yeah, conditional. Pick.
Yeah, like a conditional, you know, day two pick. I think you could get, if he's going to start somewhere, I think you can get a day three pick, probably even like a fourth rounder that conditionally moves to a third or even a second, depending on time played and Pro Bowl touchdowns, all of that jazz, almost like a, you know, escalators in a contract type thing. So, but the markets, there's not going to be a market. I mean, unless, like I said, God forbid, a team expecting a young quarterback to be healthy loses it and they don't want to tank, because I mean, let's use the Texans for instance. And I love Deshaun Watson. Everybody knows that. So, you know, you go in with the expectations of Deshaun Watson being your starter, and then all of a sudden, God forbid, anything happens to him. Well, do you really want to have the fourth pick in the draft again? Right. And you didn't even get to use it this year. And do you want to have the fourth pick in the draft again? So that's the type of avenue you may be able to finagle, you know, a pick from, but I just don't see it. There being much value for him because of the season he's coming off of. It's not like when he was in Philadelphia where he played in, I think it was 14 games that year in Philly, and he actually put up pretty good numbers. So, you know, it's not like he's coming off that year. He's actually coming off a year where he played in parts of two games and one full game and then part of another one. And there was, from his former head coach, the word degenerative to describe his knee. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are going to have to happen.
Coming on the second Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about the Cardinals' second round pick. And we'll probably throw in, we'll talk about the day two picks. We'll talk about Christian Kirk. We'll talk about Mason Cole. It's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Before we get back to the show, I want to remind you of our friends over at Harrys.com, the shaving service, the blade service that I love. I love it. It gives me the great shave every week, a couple of times a week when I shave. I've got the high quality razor. I made the switch like 3 million other 3 million other men. It's quality blades, and claim you can get a trial offer for it. I've been talking about for a while. You can get your trial offer. Claim it by going to harrys.com/cred. The founders of Harry's were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors, unnecessary features. So they knew a great shave comes down to great blades. So they make sharp, durable steel that lasts in a factory that's been making high quality blades. And they sell them directly over the internet at about $2 a blade compared to $4 or more for the more expensive ones. And here's the thing. If you don't love the shade, let Harry's know within 30 days. They'll give you a full refund of anything you've tried. But you don't even have to pay for the trial offer. You get a $13 trial offer that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. You get the handle. You get the five-blade razor with the lubricating strip and a trimmer blade. The part that it smells great is the rich, lathering shave gel. And then get a travel-grade cover. You get all that. And you get to try it for free. You can redeem your trial offer to harrys.com/cred. So go now, harrys.com/cred, to redeem your offer and let them know that I sent you to help support the show. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Time to talk about the Cardinals, day two picks, Christian Kirk and Mason Cole. Christian Kirk was one of the worst kept secrets in terms of the Cardinals. A guy who homegrown, Arizona talent, Saguaro High School, went away to college at Texas A&M. And, you know, from a personal level, the high school that I work at during the day, Williamsfield, Christian Kirk destroyed them in the final when they're in the state finals. Then what does he promptly do? He goes to Texas A&M and destroys Arizona State his freshman year. And now as a Cardinal, he's had a relationship with Larry Fitzgerald and Kurt Warner for some time. But way back in fourth grade, he was on Kurt Warner's kids, Cade, same Pop Warner team. He's been exchanging texts with Larry Fitzgerald for quite some time, going to camps, knows him. He's a Cardinals fan, grew up a Cardinals fan, to be dream come true. And that dream is reality. He's now an Arizona Cardinal, clean cut, great character kid, hardworking, athletic, productive. And in the second round, it's a great pick. Now, what is he going to become? Is he going to be a number one receiver? I don't know. But where's he going to play? It seems in college he played the majority of his snaps from the slot, which lends us to believe that maybe Larry Fitzgerald is going to be asked to play outside again. Whether he's going to play the X or the Z. It'll be interesting to see what moves forward for that. But as the type of kid that he is, he's built big. He's not tall, but he's built thick. I think Golden Tate is a really good comparison that Seth was talking about earlier. He says himself what he does best is yards after the catch, running after the catch. So he's a physical receiver. You could almost envision him being the type of player that Julian Edelman has been for the Patriots, where he can do a lot of things. He can win a lot of ways, but you're going to get the football to him with a little bit of space, or even not even a lot of space, but just a little bit of space, and he makes something happen. So we get second round pick. The top receivers like Cortland Sutton, which is a guy that we both liked, wasn't on the table. He was taken at number 40 overall. Calvin Ridley's gone. DJ Moore's gone. Kirk's about as a sure thing in terms of production, I think you're going to find. I don't think he's going to be ever going to be bad. Maybe he's not a superstar, but you're going to get production out of him.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at his like athletic profile, the way he plays mimics kind of that athletic profile comparison. So, you know, you go to the mock draftable page and you look at and you type in Christian Kirk and you look at it and you get comparisons, you know, the top one's a guy I've never over him, but the next guy down is Golden Tate. Okay, we talked about him. Another guy, Randall Cobb. All right, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cobb's, you know, a slot guy that wins with his athleticism post-catch. The last guy, Stephon Diggs, you know. So when you look at those guys, you're like, huh, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. This is a guy, you know, Tate's a guy that since he went to Detroit, his worst season was 813 yards receiving, right? 6 touchdowns. That's not a bad year at all. He's got 3 1,000-yard seasons with the Detroit Lions. So you're talking about guys that are productive, that are able, you know, kind of volume catchers, kind of like Larry Fitzgerald. And you know, I never, but when I say this, you know, understand where I'm coming from, but he can kind of be a souped up Larry Fitzgerald in the fact that, you know, he can get the same type of numbers in terms of, you know, 90 to, you know, 110 catches. But he's going to do it in a different way. You know, Fitz wins because he's one of the greatest route runners of all time. He is a guy that doesn't drop passes. He's a guy that understands, you know, where he's at on the field and how to create separation that other guys don't. Kirk is a little closer to like an Anquan Boldin, who's able to out-muscle guys. You know, he has that extra gear with the ball in his hands. And when you watch him run, you're like, why are you guys playing running back out at wide receiver? That's how runs like a guy, like a running back would. So when you look at all that, I see a guy that's going to be a very successful pro, you know, depending on the level of success. You know, when you look at it, like I said, you've got guys like Bolden Tate. He's been to one Pro Bowl. Randall Cobb's been to one Pro Bowl. Stephon Diggs, I believe, has been to two Pro Bowls. So you're talking about, you know, high end. Oh, Stephon Diggs has never been to a Pro Bowl, but, you know, a very talented receiver nonetheless. Those aren't bad comparisons. Those are actually really good comparisons. And so, you know, I think when we look at it from that perspective, you have to set your expectations the right way. Obviously, he's a hometown kid. There's going to be a ton of hype around him. But in the end, you're looking at a guy that looks like and projects like a high-end two wide receiver in the NFL. And quite frankly, at 47, that's a steal. That's a great thing, because you look at most number two wide receivers in the NFL, they're usually first round picks. So when you look at it from that perspective, you're getting a guy that, again, I think Steve Keim was able to kind of finesse his way in the draft. He didn't have to move up for this one, and he still got the right guy.
It's a fantastic thing. And if you look at, like, if you think about it, we as Cardinals fans look at receivers through the lens of Larry Fitzgerald. We have to understand Larry Fitzgerald is one of a kind. And let's be honest, Golden Tate, if you look at the numbers, he's got 90-plus receptions every year that he's been with Detroit. Take Larry Fitzgerald out of the equation. Has anyone come close to that for the Cardinals in any recent season? No, we're talking no one. So if Christian Kirk can do that, he's not a superstar, but you don't mind having him as your number one receiver target moving forward. And it builds. You've got a quarterback receiver combo, which is what I love about the first two picks. You now have a quarterback and a receiver combo that you can grow together for years and build up some chemistry and some connections there. That you're going to see for years to come, kind of like what you saw from Peyton Manning, Reggie Wayne, or Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, Peyton Manning, Pierre Garçon, Peyton Manning and anybody, or Tom Brady and anybody. You get this, only you're going to get this from the very beginning with Rosen and Christian Kirk. I think it's a fantastic selection, one that you just know that it's not going to be a bad pick, because one, he's been durable. Two, he's always been productive. He's not, because of the way he plays, he's going to catch the football and he's going to find ways to win. So there's with both players, maybe they don't become superstars, but you're going to get steady production out of all of them. And considering what the Cardinals have had, what their history is at quarterback, and then you take what they've had at receiver, other than Larry Fitzgerald for the last 10 years, let's say. Isn't that great? Because with the receiver position outside of Larry Fitzgerald is very inconsistent. You'd see flashes from Michael Floyd. You'd see a flash from John Brown. You'd see a flash from Andre Roberts, and then they go on and have careers elsewhere. But this has the potential of a kid who can be here for a long time and who wants to be here for a long time.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing, is you get a guy that kind of mimics what the Cardinals need right now. And what they need right now is to continue to kind of restock their offense. They need to regrow, you know, they need somebody else in that area. And so, like you said, it's one of those things where you can kind of watch these two grow together, and you're hopeful that when it all is said and done, that it works itself out, that the Cardinals have a combination that is not just a flash in the pan, but is something that for the next hopefully decade plus shows that the Cardinals are, you know, or is something to look forward to for this fan base.
Their third round pick, Mason Cole out of Michigan, played center for one season.
Hey, we got one, Jess. Yay.
Mason Cole, left tackle most of his career at Michigan, played center 1 year. And that's actually the position, the interior is where he's more comfortable, but because of Michigan's need, he played tackle. And he played it fine. What's great about Cole, he comes out of a school where Jim Harbaugh coached. They played in a pro-style offense. The learning curve is not going to be nearly what it is for a lot of offensive linemen that the Cardinals will take. Take Evan Bain coming out of Missouri or DJ Humphrey coming out of Florida. Cole should be able to come in and compete right away, or at least – I don't know if he's – you had a kind of bold prediction what you think is going to happen with Cole this season. But at the very minimum, what I love about the picks moving forward is the fact that the Cardinals have production. I think the Cardinals get their production in it from their rookies this year out of Kirk and maybe out of Chase Edmonds, who we're going to talk about after the break. And then they're set up for the future. And I love the potential that Cole has for 2019 and beyond, whether he plays left guard or center at that point. But what do you think his high end is for this year?
I think he can be the starter. He's a guy that kind of projects into what Ray Brown likes in terms of his centers. He's a, you know, obviously a smart guy, a guy that's durable. He's started every game while he's at Michigan from, you know, as a true freshman at left tackle, to center as a junior, and then back to left tackle. So, you know, 3 years at left tackle, a year at center. When you look at who he is as a player, he's a guy athletically, he's similar to like a guy the Cardinals had in Ted Larson, who was kind of that swing interior lineman. He's a guy that comes from a pro style offense in Michigan that's been successful. The biggest questions you have with him is how well he can do as a center in terms of snapping the ball. You know, he didn't have to pull a lot while he was playing left tackle or center. So, you know, that's going to be the question about him moving to guard. But I think he can compete this year for the starting center position, because he's definitely a better, you know, overall build and athlete than either A.Q. Shipley or Evan Bain. When you look at it, you know, 6'4", 307. So he's a bit of a, you know, of a more prototypical size type of guy. And then he's a guy that's been successful in kind of a run-based offense. And that's where, you know, that's where the Cardinals are talking about going. That's where the Cardinals are looking at going. So I think it could make sense.
And then moving forward, you have the A.Q. Shipley is going to be a free agent after this season. Even if he doesn't play this year, it sets you up for a potential where he and Evan Bain compete for the starting job at center. Or you can say, oh, they like what the Bain offers as a center. And then you can kick Cole out to left guard, and then you've got a nice – I mean, and really, you've got a nice group of DJ from DJ to Mason Cole to Evan Bain to Justin Pugh to – we'll see about right tackle next year, whether it's Andre Smith, whether it's the seventh-round guy with somebody else. But it just leaves for the potential of some good – sturdy players. Because the one thing about Mason Cole, which I love and I hate, he didn't miss even miss a practice at Michigan. And he's played in 108 straight games dating back to high school. So he's a player who is super tough. He doesn't miss time. But that always makes me worry, oh, is that injury coming? Because Evan Bain was the same way. So he's just started every game every year, four-year starter, never missed anything. I like that.
Yeah, and that's a big thing for the Cardinals, right, is to have some consistency, something that they've lacked the last couple of years. And they need – they need these guys to stay healthy and play for another, you know, get some continuity on the, along the offensive line and allow this group to even have a chance moving forward. And so whether it's, like you said, it's this year or starting next year, you want to be able to watch these guys kind of grow together and work through things. So, We'll see how it works out, but I like the Mason Cole pick. You know, when we talked about him, we talked about him on day three. Well, I mean, the Cardinals picked him with their compensatory 97th pick overall. It's
basically a fourth
fourth round pick. So I mean, in terms of value, when I did my, you know, horizontal board, the Cardinals' first four picks all fell into the round that, you know, I kind of had them valued at. Obviously Rosen on in round one, Kirk in round two is my, you know, as kind of my pseudo wide receiver two, he and DJ Moore. And then Cole in round three, in, you know, I had him as a round four guy, but again, you're talking about a compensatory pick. And then their fourth round pick, who I had as a fourth round grade, you know, and man, did that seemed to kind of perplex and even bother some Cardinals fans, right?
Yes, and we'll talk about that coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We'll talk about the day three picks. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, and now for the day three picks, and Seth led us into who that fourth round pick was at the end. Again, or the compensatory pick, Fordham running back Chase Edmonds. Now, I can understand the regular Cardinals fan that gets their information mostly from team or report, but don't necessarily go deep into day three picks, and so they don't, small school guys are not going to know. Chase Edmonds, Fordham, oh my gosh, the production that he had. He could have gone to a couple other schools, but chose Fordham because they treated him right and they gave him a chance to play. He wanted to play, and play he did. 1,800 yards plus his freshman year. You know, 1,500, 1,300, and so he's a workhorse. He had some injury issues his senior year, but even still, he scored, what is it, 74 total touchdowns in college, over 5,800 rushing yards. He can catch the football. He did in his pro day. He didn't do any running back drills. He said he only worked out of the slot so he could show his versatility. There's a lot to like about it, and he's a guy that we mentioned on this show that we both wrote about because the Cardinals liked him at this pro day, and he was, it's not like he was completely unknown. He was at the combine,
right? And when you look at everything, and this is something you and I have talked about quite a bit, you know, when we do these draft previews, we didn't mention him, but it's one of those things where it's hard to mention everybody, and you and I, you know, we run our sites. We both wrote about him. You know, we both had him kind of on our rankings boards, knowing that he was a guy that was legitimately a plausible pick. And you and I have both talked about the running back position, that they liked running backs in this draft. And so when you look at how the running backs went, you had – obviously Saquon Barkley at two, and then you had Sonny Michel as the number two running back off the board. But then you had Nick Chubb at the beginning of round two. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody. I mean, everybody was assuming Chubb was going to be, you know, in that 40 to 70 range because of what teams thought of his knee. And then Darius Geis finally went off the board. And so all of a sudden right there, you're like, okay, well, the top guys are all kind of gone now. So what do we do? How do we rank these guys? How do we rank these running backs? And so, you know, just looking at the running back rankings, you had, like I said, oh, and Rashad Penny. I forgot to mention Rashad Penny was the number two running back off the board. So my bad. He was the Right. So you're talking about Rashad Penny as the number two running back off the board. Sonny Michel is the third running back. Then you had Nick Chubb as the fourth running back. Ronald Jones as the fifth running back. He went sixth pick in the second round. Kerryon Johnson, the Detroit Lions traded up to draft Kerryon Johnson. So all of a sudden this run started on running backs. And we've talked about this before, right? When runs start, you either do one of two things. You either kick the position out, or when it gets to your pick, you semi reach in the eyes of the outside world. And so we saw that with the Cardinals at cornerback in 2016. There was that huge run on day two of cornerbacks, and then the Cardinals didn't pick to like 89. I can't even remember the number, but they picked in the 80s that year. And so when Brandon Williams was the pick, everybody's like, huh, that's like a round or two earlier than we thought. Well, but that's the thing is when you set your board up and you go, okay, well, we want to get one of these guys. Like, yeah, there might be guys we have ranked slightly higher, but sometimes you do have to go into that need pile and say, all right, we need a cornerback, or in this case, we need a running back. We really like a running back. Well, that running back for them was a no doubter. That running back for them was Chase Edmonds, and it was never really a question. And so when you go to, you know, NFL.com, or when you go to RotoWorld, or when you go to PFF, or when you go to Bleacher Report, like, yeah, like you're going to see names like, you know, John Kelly and Mark Walton and Kalen Ballage and these guys that are ahead of Chase Edmonds, but for all intents and purposes, what we know is they would have taken Chase Edmonds before any of those guys still. So, you know, when it's all said and done, I think they got a guy that they valued as a top 10 running back in this class, even though he wasn't a top 10 consensus running back prospect.
Well, and here's the thing. They really like him. They really like him, and they have lofty comparisons for him. They wouldn't even name the player comp that they have for him athletically. They like what he can do as a runner. They like what he can do as a receiver. They said he can do some of the same things that David Johnson does. He might be the second most productive rookie in this class behind Christian Kirk, because he very well could be your number two running back going into this year.
But not only that, he's a guy that allows you to do different things, because he's not a traditional – I mean, he is a traditional running back, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't play the running back position in a traditional way. You can utilize him in space. You can utilize him kind of like you do DJ. So all of a sudden now you have interchangeable pieces, and you can have them on the field together. You know, people have been saying, oh, it's what they've wanted with Andre Ellington, but Andre Ellington wasn't the athletic specimen that this guy is. Andre Ellington wasn't put together like this guy is, and Andre Ellington had a history of leg injuries dating back to his freshman year of Clemson, and this guy had one season where he had, you know, an injury. And so when you put all that together, yeah, I guess it's the idea that a lot of Cardinals fans had of what Andre Ellington and David Johnson could do together, but now it'll be a reality of hopefully, you know, two talented running backs that can, you know, that can be used in space. And that's why I wrote about it on the day they drafted him. I compared him to Deion Lewis, because I think he's a guy that you can use similar to the way the Patriots use Deion Lewis. They line Deion Lewis out wide. They line Deion Lewis up in the backfield. They line Deion Lewis, you know, out in the slot, and you're able to utilize him in a multifaceted way. And so, like you're saying, yeah, he's a fourth round pick, but he may be a guy that catches 35 passes and carries the ball 125 times on the season, you know, so he gets close to 150 or slightly over 150 total touches. And he's a guy that can have, you know, close to 1,000 yards on those 150 total touches.
They're sixth and seventh round picks, more developmental. Chris Campbell out of Penn State. They finally, and their only defensive player that they draft, take him in the sixth round. He's the Jared Vildier pick. Out of Penn State, 6'1". He's got your prototypical length and athleticism at cornerback. Might not have it, the elite speed that the Cardinals tend to like, that they got out of Brandon Williams or Patrick Peterson. Played only started 1 year, but they like that he can play inside. He can play out. He actually was a safety coming out of high school. He didn't really play safety in college, but he gives them versatility. and athleticism. I don't see him competing this year for the starting job. I mean, potentially, but what you saw from their last two picks and their seventh round pick was Corey Cunningham, tackle out of Cincinnati. Super athletic. Talked about them the first bit of the show. You see the impact of the coaching staff. Steve Wilks is known for being able to develop defensive backs late in the draft. Ray Brown has been known to develop offensive linemen. And so they took their cornerback late in the draft. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with them moving forward. I don't know what to think of him, if he's going to be more Harlan Miller, if he's going to – I don't know what to expect from either one of those players other than Cunningham is definitely a look to the future. If he plays this year, well, something's wrong. But if Chris Campbell plays, maybe, because that position's sort of wide open right now.
And when you look at Christian Campbell, his numbers are really interesting to look at. He's kind of like a guy that bounced around the NFL but started quite a bit and had some good seasons, and that's Will Blackman. So, you know, obviously there was some off-the-field things with Blackman that cost him some time in the NFL, but a 10-year pro now at this point. He was a fourth-round pick for the Green Bay Packers in 2006. But from an athleticism standpoint, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the two. The thing with Blackman – or, sorry, with Campbell is that's crazy to me, and I don't know if you saw this, but his, like, jumps are ridiculous. legitimately world class. Like,
they don't match his 40 to me. They don't match his 40. The 40 is 4.55. And that's the thing. Like, with Carlton Agudosi, who had ridiculous vertical and broad jump numbers, the undrafted receiver out of Syracuse last year, his 40 time was like 4.7 officially. He ran that closer to 4.5. But it doesn't seem, when you see those leaping numbers, you usually see speed numbers to go with it.
Yeah, and so that's what the question becomes with him, because, you know, like you said, it doesn't quite match up, but he's got some athletic profile that's similar to actually more like safeties. And you talked about it, that he's played safety before. You know, Eric Reed out of LSU comes to mind. Eric Reed was a 4.53 guy. Okay, well, that makes sense. 6'1", 213, 4.53. Campbell, you know, at 6'1", 195, but with the kind of freakishly long arms for a cornerback. TJ McDonald's another one, the safety. I think he's with the Rams at this point. I can't remember.
He was at the Rams, though. I can't ever get over your little vine of TJ McDonald that you put up.
So when you look at it from that perspective, it makes sense, because that's something that we've talked about quite a bit. When you look at these guys that Wilks has developed, and he's probably not going to be doing as much coaching in that developmental thing anymore. But when you look at these guys that Wilks has developed, he has done so by getting athletes. And so I think what Campbell offers you is kind of a guy that can play that off zone. Now, I know he played man at Penn State, but I think he can be a guy, kind of your off zone corner, your pattern matching corner that Wilks uses typically opposite his cornerback one. So he has his cornerback one manned up on guys, and then he uses kind of a zone scheme on the opposite side, and then in the back end. And so Campbell, you know, like Jess said, probably not near one. They're going to give Brandon Williams every single chance to knock this out of the park. But from that perspective, he could be a guy that, you know, fits that mold in a year or two.
And Cunningham, tackle, can play left tackle, right tackle. His athletic profile is out of this world. Ray Brown really wanted him. Ray Brown, their offensive line coach, called him the day of the draft and said, I'm going to see if I can get – I'm going to see if we can work something out. He had calls from 8 or 9 teams as a priority free agent. So it'll be interesting seeing what happens with him. He will be a guy to watch in the preseason, the second half of games. raw, definitely raw. He was not an offensive lineman entering college, so he's still relatively new to the position. Was a tight end, was a basketball player, got big, played left tackle, played right tackle. But some of the metrics are really good because last year, his senior season there at Cincinnati, he didn't allow a single sack in nearly 500 pass blocking snaps, which is that's good. And he has the athleticism. He's got the, you know, a 36 vertical leap for a guy who's 6'6", 305, 310. He ran the 40 and 4.9. It will be interesting to see him. I don't know what he looks like technically in an offensive line. I can't even pretend to tell you what's good or not from a guy on the offensive line. But if you give something like that athletic profile to Ray Brown, and he's got the if he's smart enough and he works hard enough, he's going to turn into something. And it you might say on a high level projection, maybe he can take over at right tackle in year two. Maybe. If not, I mean, if you get a seventh round pick that sticks on the roster for his entire contract as a depth guy, you win.
Right. And the other thing is, real quick, I forgot to mention this while we're talking about Christian Campbell. The difference in athletic profile from the past regime to this regime is like stunning, because the past regime, Christian Campbell wouldn't have met their metrics because you said he was kind of slow in his 40, and not kind of, he was slow in his 40. But then you look at Brandon Williams, and he probably wouldn't have matched this regime's metrics because his jumps were awful. like his vertical jump was in the second percentile of all testers.
And what, like 31 inches? Is that what it was?
30 and a half.
Yay.
And his broad jump was not good either. So it's interesting to see, as Jess and I have talked about before, and this is kind of the mundane, kind of, you know, maybe the stuff that's not as interesting, but it's interesting to track this stuff because idea of what your coaches are looking for in terms of profile. Okay, we can overlook a bad 40 because you have these elite explosive traits in terms of jumps. And now you're talking about Corey Cunningham, and it's the same type of thing. Okay, we can overlook maybe, you know, a less than ideal strength, upper body strength. You know, one if you read the NFL.com kind of scouting report, even vague, because I don't know, and I'm not
his pro day. It said he put up 28 or 29 bench press reps, which was the knock on him was strength, but then his pro day numbers were crazy.
Absurd. And so that's the thing is when you, from that perspective, you have to look at it in the sense of, you know, these guys, Ray Brown, especially when he pounds the table for somebody. And so, you know, I always go back because it's interesting to look at these. I always go back and I want to know, like, all right, well, Ray Brown coached up a couple guys, right? When you look at Andrew Norwell, the guy that is an all-pro and became the highest paid guard in the NFL, when you look at his weaknesses, it says the same thing. Can't improve weight room strength. They had him as a lumbering, you know, as a phone booth guy, you know, all the buzzwords that they use on offensive linemen. And Andrew Norwell was a guy that Ray Brown wanted as a priority free agent to the Carolina Panthers. So when you look at it from that perspective, when Ray Brown kind of speaks in terms of offensive line talent, everybody else needs to kind of shut up and listen. And I, again, I'm not being negative to any of the draft analysts or anything like that, but I would say the same for Jess or I. Like, if we said, well, you know, this guy, I watched him, I didn't think he was any good. Well, Ray Brown has made chicken salad out of a lot of chicken, you know what. And so when you look at it from that perspective, if Ray Brown is saying, like, this is the guy I want, then by God, get Ray Brown that guy, because you may be on to something here. And so, you know, when you talk about Cunningham, yeah, it's not a sexy pick. It's it's a pick with long odds, but and maybe I believe too much in Ray Brown, but when you look at it from what Ray Brown's done in his career with Carolina, you really have to be comfortable with anybody that he would, you know, quote unquote, pound the table for.
Overall, I give this great draft an A. I can't give it anything else than an A, but it's almost solely for the fact that they got the quarterback of the future. They've got the quarterback set for the future. Obviously, how he turns out determines how this the entire draft class is. They got a guy, Christian Kirk, who can produce immediately. And then the rest are set up. They don't have to produce this year. Maybe Chase Edmonds does. Maybe Mason Cole. But basically, they have pieces in place for next year. I love overall what it looks like. I love they didn't give up too much. And I love the position they addressed. I wish they would have addressed defensive back earlier, but I don't know who I would have, you know, they also needed a receiver. They have some bodies at cornerback, and they have a defensive staff. They have a talented defense already. So the fact they addressed it finally in the sixth round is great, but I loved the draft. I thought there is not a single pick I went, oh, dang it. I wish they had gone somewhere else. There were picks that went before the Cardinals selections that I wanted to get. Like at cornerback, like that fourth round pick, I was hoping Anthony Averett, whether it was the third round or fourth, I was hoping that Alabama's Anthony Averett was going to be around, but that didn't end up happening. So I love the draft. Overall, what would you give the draft?
I would say an A, and I talked about this in my, you know, kind of draft grade thing. I think the fact that they were able to get a quarterback, I think the fact that they were able to make, you know, a move, and it was such a small move that it allowed this draft to be special. It allowed this draft to, you know, potentially be great and franchise changing, because there's nothing else that they really needed more than a quarterback. And then they come back and kind of address all their other offensive needs and hit, get to where they need to be. I don't think there's anything you can give it but an A, because we're talking about a draft on paper before they actually perform. And when you talk about it in that perspective, they hit all the notes they needed to hit, and it was perfect.
And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us everywhere. If you're listening to us, you know how to get to us. If you know someone doesn't know how to get to us, tell them. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Audio Boom. You can find it on the Cards Wire. You can find it featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back. I'm not sure. It might be a week or two with our next episode. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. The Cardinals say, rise up, Red Sea. They say, be Red Sea Red. And we put it together to say, rise up in Sea Red.